Good evening, Peter. Thanks for joining me again.
Hey, Daniel. Good evening.
Welcome back. It's a new season.
Yep.
I think one of the things that we talked a lot last season about individual fundamental problems that we've identified in society, both through mostly through observation, through personal experience, through the many conversations you and I both have with people, the many different things that we're involved in, right? It's not like we sit at home and stare at the wall, thankfully. One thing that I'd like to do this season, and I know you and I've talked about this briefly, is how do we move forward? Like what are the solutions as we see to many of the fundamental and underlying problems that we've discussed? And I'll highlight a few. We talked about the glorification of mediocrity in particular, and I think that ties back to a general lapse in accountability across the scale. Yeah. We talked about the education system. We talked about first principles. We talked about control mechanisms, social media, cancel culture, propaganda, freedom of speech. So many of the fundamental institutions of our societies, and also some of the largest threats to the same. And again, I think as we go forward here into a new year, into a new phase here for the show, I really want to get people thinking about different ways forward. Part of it is the ability to reason. I think the other part of it that's really big is how can the average person, how can one of our listeners, one of our supporters, take the information that we're trying to convey and hold an argument with somebody as such that it can be convincing to someone who's of a counter opinion. And it's not an easy task, but I don't see a way forward for us if people aren't having these conversations, right?
So I think a few things, because that's quite a bit to unpack. I was kind of looking at the stats for the popular episodes that we had for season one, and by far and away, the propaganda and the freedom of speech episodes absolutely seem to have hit a nerve like nothing else that we did. I think that is probably a good indicator of sort of like the root cause of how we can start affecting positive change, right? Let's talk about propaganda. Okay, why does it work? Because it comes from a position of authority, right? Well, how is the position of authority maintained? Well, you know, part of it, you know, taking the force aspect out of it, right? Because whoever's got the guns has the power, okay? But apart from that, and if we're just talking about intellectual and moral arguments, part, I think, of what disingenuous people rely on is, you know, credentialism, right? Well, I'm the expert. Well, why are you the expert? Well, I have a doctorate in such and such, and I wrote a book. Okay, that's wonderful. That means you're an excellent student, and you were able to thrive in an academic setting. But what have you done in the real world? You know, you're a doctor of economics, but have you ever started a company? Have you ever had to make a payroll? Have you ever had to go out and solicit sales? Well, no, then you don't know what you're talking about, because I have. And the guy with the pizza shop on the corner has. So they instantly have more credibility because of real-world applicability, not your credentialism. And then this comes in to the whole thing of how do you counter credentialism? And in my mind, and as I think we've spoken about in the past, it's the force of the argument of a meritocracy. If you can demonstrably prove that you have a track record in something, whatever field that it is, I think that track record, backed up by, you know, again, verifiable facts, far outstrips any book that anybody could write, any lecture that they could give, any type of jargon that can throw out to try and deceive the people. And I think this is probably the fight that's going to happen, you know, the next 5 years or so. Because, I mean, look at Twitter, right? I mean, love them or hate them for, you know, whatever Musk's personal failings are. I thought it was pretty terrifying that he takes it over, and instantly we start seeing all of the subversion by the FBI in the political realm, which is, apart from being morally despicable, against U.S. law. They're not supposed to interfere in domestic issues at all. They're a law enforcement agency that investigate crimes. Well, why would they be involved with this? It's propaganda. It's controlling the narrative and trying to keep people in their places in certain ways. I'm sure there are many other instances that we're going to find out over the next few years, not just Twitter, but other places as well, right? Well, how do you counter that? And it stopped listening to the guys with the paper that says they're competent and start listening to the people who are competent in, you know, whatever their disciplines might be.
I think that there are differences in the credentialism argument as well. One that I'll point out, there's a difference between the ability to learn and understand something and the ability to apply it. So when we actually talk about general economic principles, what we're talking about and what Peter's discussing is the ability to take some degree of economic knowledge and apply it. You don't have to have a PhD in economics to start a pizza shop. However, you can. There might be other opportunities to you. Writing a book tends to be a something that happens throughout the course of academia, and some books are better than others, for sure. We're not saying that if you have a PhD, you can't write a good book. That's not what we're saying at all. What we're saying is
relying on the fact of having a PhD as giving weight to your arguments
as the basis for the authority.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's something else when you're talking about, you know, a 5-volume meticulously researched masterwork of somebody's life versus, you know, something you slam out for Simon & Schuster in 200 pages, right?
Yes. And that's why books, like all things, but specifically books, have the some of the greatest potential in our development as a culture and just throughout humanity, honestly. It's because you can take someone's life work, throw it into 300, 400, 500, 600, 700 pages, and now anybody in the world who can get their hands on that could learn what took you an entire lifetime to figure out, per se.
Yeah.
You know, I'm throwing a lifetime out there as a unverifiable measure for sure, but let's just, you know, surmise the masterwork, the Magna Carta, if you will, of your literary prowess, and you find yourself in that potential in your lap. So and then the question is, what do you do with it? And now you do that like hundreds of thousands of times over, and all of a sudden, well, gee, man, you lose the forest through the trees at that level. Like, which book are you going to read, et cetera? So it's a different thing. You have to rely on different sources and understanding and all kinds of stuff. The point I'm making here is just to say, you know, I'll give you an example, even in economics. I mean, Adam Smith, who wrote The Wealth of Nations, had a lot of great economic observations, okay, and kind of charted a new way forward economically for the time and even into the more industrial and modern era. But what he was actually quite wrong in several observations as well, right? So just because you're an observer of things, and I'll give him credit because he actually got his hands dirty. He got on the ground as well. So, but anyway, I guess what I'm saying is it's a complex issue. But I think that what Peter's talking about is the credentialism element. It's not because you have a title doesn't make you the expert on any number of fields. And I think that's what we've come. Yeah.
Yeah. Where I was going with it more so rather than, you know, like somebody using their credentials in a legitimate fashion, right, to sort of advance the study of whatever their field is.
Right.
I was coming at it from the perspective of using it to give them a position of authority to make blanket statements in service of propaganda or thought suppression. And sadly, I think that's too much of what's happening, because notice that whenever we have disagreeable public debate, it always centers around somebody wanting to be recognized as an authority figure simply because they have PhD at their end of their title, right? Or their end of their name. That doesn't necessarily grant you authority to speak definitively about something. It just means, you know, you spend a lot of time in academia. And I have a somewhat personal distaste for it, having dealt with too many paper PhDs that didn't really do the work, in my opinion, necessary to justify their degree. Because when they got into the real world, it was an entirely different experience than what they were used to in academia.
I actually had the firsthand experience with that around 10 years ago. I run across within a 1-year period, two people had PhDs that were working in the same industry as me who had frankly no clue what they were doing. And it really baffled me at the time. So, and I'm not trying to generally discredit people who get PhDs. Many people in my family have a PhD. I'm not saying that because you have one, you don't know what you're doing. I'm saying that it doesn't grant you authority over all fields and subjects, right?
Yeah. So to sort of bring it back to the whole propaganda discussion, right? You know, what's the counter to this? It's, you know, to have people who are actually willing to debate issues on their merits and to determine whether something is quantifiably true, false, good, bad. Everything isn't, well, it all depends. And that's too much of what the foundation of the specious reasoning from the propaganda mouthpiece coming out of the institutions, whether they be foundations, academia, corporate shills, whatever it can be. You know, it's too much to listen to these guys, right? Like my favorite example of this are all the TED Talks. You know, okay, sometimes, yeah, there's some pretty legitimately interesting and people of substance that give those TED Talks, right? More often than not, it's somebody pushing an agenda. And I was very interested to see the opinion of some younger people on this once. We talked about it. And, you know, they said, well, you know, these TED Talks are great. And I mentioned to this person who was a very, very intelligent young man. And I said, so why do you think they give those TED Talks? He goes, what do you mean? I said, dude, they're pushing an agenda. They're either looking for funding, they have a company they're shilling, they're trying to get appointed to a board. They're not doing this for the good of humanity. And, you know, to his credit, the kid was only 16, 17 at the time. He's like, man, I never thought of that. People really do that? I'm like, yeah, people lie to you all the time, pal, all the time. And this is the source of it. And I think people need to be conscious of this because what ends up happening is, all right, you now build up your credentialism in a different fashion where, oh, look, I sit on the board of directors of this company. Oh, look, I was a VP at this company, then a senior VP at that company. They asked me over to TED to give a TED talk 3 years running. Wow, this guy must really know what he's talking about. No, this guy's good at networking. And that's why he gets all these opportunities and, you know, positions. At the end of the day, if he was so great, why didn't somebody drop money on him to have him go out and do his own company to make the next, you know, Oracle or Amazon or, you know, Biogen or what have you, right? There's a difference between pseudo credentials and, you know, real credentials. And the guys who really can back it up are the ones who move the culture forward one way or another.
So action speaks louder than words, essentially, is
hands down
what I'm talking about here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder though, on the flip side of this particular point of view. So one of the notes that I have just taken throughout time, I log like points. I have one notes for days.
Yeah.
You know, most of this is from before I got smacked upside the head. Some of the newer stuff, you can tell the difference. I'll share it one day. But, well, the newer stuff, I don't hold back nearly as much. That's the effect of the prefrontal concussion. But anyway, that's a process. So the point that I had specific that I think applies here is that what is the corrosive effect of meritocracy? And how do we align our goals in this idea, in this space, in this theory place, right?
Well, actually, dig into that a little. Why is meritocracy corrosive?
So if we look at the picture, when I talk about meritocracy in that way, I'm it's not indifferent from credentialism specifically. So if I'm in a meritocratic state, purely meritocratic state, what do we see? We see the rise of a technocratic way of government structure, et cetera. So are the people that know one specific expertise, right, the best to apply it and create social policy for the same? That's what I'm referring to when I say the corrosive effect of meritocracy. So
I would argue no, right?
I would as well.
You know, they are specialists in their area and should be limited to their area, not, you know, running the ship. You know, the king needs generals, the king needs a purser. The purser and the general doesn't necessarily have the ability to be king, right?
Yeah. And the other point that I had written on this here was, how do we align this to the common interests of mankind? So I talk about actualizing potential a lot in this podcast because that's my view of each individual person, right? But how do we get there? So this is a bit of an ambiguous topic. So it's like, okay, we have credentialism, which is used to create narratives through a story. It's used to counter or prevent arguments from bubbling up and you know, counterclaims. Oh, yeah, you can ask that question, but what background do you have? You know, so like you can't question it. But it's like any argument that you can't question immediately violates any function of reason whatsoever. And we might as well be back in the 12th century.
So I think this is core to the problem, right? Too many people want to sit around and debate things, right? And live in their pathetic little ivory tower where we end up saying, no, I'm more credentialed than you are. I'm smarter. You listen to me. Meanwhile, the doers of society are out there building bridges, you know, tilling fields, doing whatever needs to be done to actually keep things functioning. And I think this is the inherent conflict that we have to resolve, in that the amount of people who are out there doing something are increasingly supporting far too many people who are riding their coattails, right? And yeah, you know, you can say this is kind of that whole Atlas Shrugged thing, but I don't think so. I think it's more profound than that, because we're not just talking about economy. We're not just talking about, institutions in the classic sense. I'm talking about interpersonal relationships, right? How many people are out there willing to engage, to talk to people face to face? Or do you just want to sort of hide in your bubble and not really mesh yourself in the true sense of building interpersonal relationships and personal networks of the truest sense? This is going to be the failure, because no man is an island unto himself, as the old saying goes, although people want to believe that that's possible. And sadly, too many of them are, you know, going up the ivory tower, pulling up the ladder after them and sticking their fingers in their ears saying, la, 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 I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with the world. And meanwhile, the countryside's burning around them.
Right.
Right. Whereas the people who are in the countryside are saying, now I'm going to put out this fire and then I'm going to rebuild my farm and replant my crops.
And move forward.
Can I have some of your food? No, you're going to starve. You're in the ivory tower. Right.
I think that part of what I wanted to do when we started this podcast was try to bring some of these thoughts, knowledge, whatever it may be, out of the ivory tower, if you will, frankly. Yeah. You know, I don't think that we should leave anything unturned or unquestioned. And even the institutions themselves should be questioned. I don't disagree with that. Questioning them doesn't mean that they're inherently invalid, wrong, or otherwise, right?
No. Some of them are.
Sure.
Some of them. Some of them need to change. And some of them are true in what they teach and what they promulgate.
I think what we would find if we uncovered everything, we turned the stone over, if you will, okay, is that anywhere where there's a lapse in general accountability in the upper levels of a particular structure, that the level of corruption will be inherently higher.
And the trust in the general populace diminishes exponentially.
Correct. And that actually goes both ways.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's why the dictators are always worried they're going to get executed.
Right. And this is why we're having such widespread societal breakdowns across the globe. This isn't just U.S.
No, it's not.
Where, you know, people are waking up and realizing that they've been lied to too long, and that there are too many of the, you know, parasites at top of these structures that are leeching off their own hard work. It's got to change. And, you know, part of how you engender that change is fostering a culture of doing. Now, whatever that is, you know, somewhat irrelevant, right? I mean, yeah, you want to go start a business, that's great. You know, you want to go and pursue a passion that contributes meaningfully, also great. Whatever it is, do it. Take whatever steps you need to do to make yourself a viable option in your chosen field of impact, and do something about it. Don't just sit home and back up a keyboard, you know, typing on forums and all that stuff. That's a waste of life. That's barely existence, let alone living.
Right. It's not solving any problems.
Yeah. And, you know, hand in hand with that is building these interpersonal relationships we keep talking about. You know, how do you be resilient? How do you be, mentally tough, right, in a positive sense? It's by having widespread inputs, socially, intellectually, emotionally, into your own life to realize, you know, you're a strand on the web that literally spans across the world right now. I mean, it's insane when you think about how easy it is to communicate with people from all walks of life in all areas, not just your neighborhood, not just people you hung out with, not just people in your state or your work or what have you. You know, you and I talked about many times, you know, over the years, we've worked and got to know people in, you know, other continents on a routine basis.
Right.
That's mind-blowing. That's amazing. Why wouldn't you want to take advantage of that to expand yourself and to foster your own personal growth?
I think there's a lot of reasons why people will not end up there. I think one is it's easier to blame someone else for your problems. It's easier to externalize issues.
Yes.
It's much harder to accept responsibility for your actions and the implications they have on your own path in life and existence.
Yeah, but to your point, I think the crux of it all, where it's easier to blame somebody else, and therefore it's easier for somebody to exploit that sense of blame for their own purposes of control and domination.
Right? Exactly.
And the more you take personal accountability, the stronger you become and the stronger the culture becomes.
It also makes me think of the groups that we find ourselves in, the social media presences, the followings mm-hmm. that people have, the general messaging that people can attach themselves to, the removal of thought, right? Because, well, if I don't think about this problem, if I'm not trying to solve this problem, well, it's because it's not my problem.
It doesn't exist.
It's someone else's problem, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. Oh, all these other people agree. This is Bob's problem. Screw Bob, you know?
Yeah.
Well, guess what happens? Even after you've screwed Bob, you still have the same problem. Right. So it's like, right. I mean, it's not, it's a short term, it's that short term loop again. Right. But it's self-destructive. It's not good. You're not going to get anywhere.
Well, incredibly so, because if you go ahead and say, hey, this is that guy's problem, I don't need to worry about it. Then when it happens to you, and it will, do you want everybody to say, nah, it's Dan's problem, I don't need to worry about it? No, you want somebody to help you because, you know, why wouldn't you? You're a human being and, you know, hey, we all need a helping hand once in a while, right?
Right.
I think people need to realize we're all part of that interconnected network of human beings. And the more that we strengthen those connections, even if it's something as trivial as, you know, talking to your neighbor and saying hello, right? Stuff like that. It all matters. And you'd be surprised, at least I was, because we talked about it. I think we talked about it on air. But, you know, last year, yeah, we both had some pretty serious health problems. I was surprised at the outpouring of support that I got from people that I didn't expect to hear from. So that was very heartening in that, you know, all the hope isn't lost and that, you know, true human decency exists and continues to exist. So you can't let yourself be brainwashed by all the negativity that we're surrounded by every day.
I completely agree. It's funny how death and near-death experiences bring people together.
Yeah.
It's like we all share in that same fate that draws us to that moment. I mean it's very, very intriguing to me. I mean, like, I guess it's more intriguing to me that we don't just do it every third Sunday of the month, for example.
Yeah.
And I guess it's because we all have our own lives and we're going our separate directions. And I'm sure there were plenty of people that you probably even haven't talked to in many years that hopefully reached out, you know? I mean, these things are not small.
Well, I'll tell you, in my case, what surprised me were people who I never expected to hear from that made a point to reach out to me and my wife, right? Yeah, that meant a lot. It really did. It also surprised me how selfish some other people were that I expected to hear from that I didn't. But the good far outweighed the bad. And it, like I said, it was definitely a life-changing experience, not just, you know, what I went through in and of itself, but again, seeing the reaction to it from quarters expected and unexpected.
Absolutely. How do we get to the point where we have, and we have the credentialism argument, we have the...
Yeah.
The application of meritocracy to becoming a technocracy, a technocratic state, which is where we're at right now, frankly.
Yeah.
How do we get out of that? I mean, I think propaganda plays a large part into control, which is how we got here, which goes back to the social media stuff that we've talked about, short-term attention, manipulation of organizations to portray narratives, et cetera. And it's really just to redirect that short-term attention or whatever it may be. And I think academia plays into this as well, right? I'm just curious, how do you think we move forward?
What's the common thread through all of these? It's the fact that it's an external, faceless entity manipulated behind the scenes by a number of people that is causing the distress, right? Is it anything that's happening at the community level with people with whom you interact on a face-to-face basis? Very seldom. Sometimes yes, but more often than not, the source of agitation, the source of discord is external and organizational. So somebody has an agenda that they're pushing, whatever that might be and whoever it is. But if you unplug yourself from that and you start reorienting and tuning your frequencies to being human focused instead of corporate focused or organizational focused, I think you start getting on the path to, intellectual, spiritual freedom, whatever it is. And you start eliminating these needless sources of anxiety, the needless sources of depression. You start breaking the dopamine feedback loop. But it all starts with the realization that time is limited on this planet. You know, we do not exist in a vacuum. There are people around us with whom we need to interact and with whom we need to maintain civil, human, spiritual-based relationships, however people want to interpret that. I think the more I see of how things have gone, that's the source of the problem. People are looking for external sources, not the internal.
I agree with you. One thing that you just hit on that I think is very important is the idea of the community. So
yeah,
a lot of times I've spent reflecting on this, and if the communities offer opportunity, then people will stay. If they don't, then you'll find the people who are capable of leaving will leave. And you can see that almost anywhere in the world right now.
Anywhere. I mean, why is Egypt? Why is Europe getting flooded by all the sub-Saharan African immigrants, right? Because there's no opportunity. They want to leave. So anybody who can leave is going to leave to try and make a life for themselves somewhere. You know, this is new. This is not the way that it was in the past.
No. Right? I met two people from Nigeria that had, bachelor's degrees that were driving Uber here in the United States because it's no longer safe in their country because it's so corrupt, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like getting shot in the streets, corrupt, because you got robbed because you owned a business and they didn't like that, right? So
yeah.
Insert Marxist ideology here and reap the benefits, right? Well, the problem is that it's only those that control in that scheme that get to reap the benefits. So that's the massive disconnect. Yeah.
So, and again, this is why I say all the sources external, organizational, right? It's just a higher level mafia shakedown. And that's what all this stuff boils down to. If you want to keep it nice and understandable for the average guy on the street, all of these organizations that are making you miserable are making you miserable as part of a thug operation to get you to do what they want, whether it be, socially, electorally, economically, what have you, right? It's not coming from other people that you interact with. It's always a third party quasi thug organization. And I view it really as that it is that simple. It's all a different form of a shakedown record that the mob used to run before the FBI broke them up.
So if we look at the community, if we can make models that work locally and specifically, then from a governmental structure perspective, all we need is systems in place that support that, right? And it's not so indifferent than how we have states in a republic, for example. I mean, if I want certain freedoms that I'm not exposed to in Wisconsin or Massachusetts or any other state, I can go to a state where they are, particularly, right?
Right.
So, that's even kind of a much larger scale than what I'm referring to. I mean, people, you live in a house, the house is in a neighborhood, presumably, maybe not, but it's in a community for sure. It's in a town or a city. You're part of a local area. You have people that you interact with. We're not all out to get each other. And typically in our communities, especially if we're doing well, we're doing it well, I should say, we're out to see each other succeed, right? Like if I have friends that own businesses, I don't want a discount. I want to help them, Like, I want them to do well, right. You know? There's plenty of people that I barter with, don't get me wrong, you know? But yeah.
But that's okay, you know? Everybody wins.
Right, right.
But I think you hit a point, though, that's kind of worth talking about, too. You know, government doesn't need to support these grassroots organizations, right? That's asking too much, because then if they're going to support them, they're going to manipulate them.
Yeah, they're going to manipulate it. It also presumes that they have more knowledge about what an individual group of people should be doing, okay?
Right.
And that goes back to the propaganda conversation that we've talked about as well.
Exactly, yeah. The best that government can do is not hinder it.
Yes.
And I think that's far more effective, right? I mean, you know, if somebody opens up a soup kitchen in the ghetto and, you know, now all of a sudden the abandoned, burnt out buildings that might exist get torn down and replaced with better buildings and, you know, people get hot meals and things improve materially because of all the positive activity, don't shut them down because they forgot to pull a permit to have more than 10 people at a time in their hall, you know, eating lunch or whatever.
Yeah, it's bureaucracy.
That's the bureaucratic nonsense that puts an end to all of this, right? And, you know, like every town.
What's the value in that?
None.
Oh, yeah. I want to make sure we call that out.
Yeah. You know, if the government really wants to help, then all they got to do is say, hey, look, we've got all these tax seizure properties that are sitting empty. And gee, that's why the ghetto formed, because it's all empty properties that are burnt out and destroyed. We'll give them to you for whatever you want, and we'll work with you to get the permitting through. There's no money involved. There's no, you know, change of hands, any of that stuff. It's just removing obstacles, and then the people will find a way to do things, right? Because, again, I think inherently people are decent. Given a chance, they're going to do the right thing. They're going to help everybody else out. And that will be the sort of the seed that will germinate into healthy and thriving communities over the long haul.
I agree with you. And so when you said the role of the government should be not to hinder the development of that.
Yeah.
I don't disagree, but I would actually take it a step further, because my view of government is to set the structure in place as such that we actualize the fullest potential of each member of our society.
Right. Yeah.
And that's not something that you wave a magic wand and it just happens, right? This takes a lot of thought, a lot of planning at many levels, from many of the things that we have talked about in the first season. And part of what I want to do in this season is start to bring more and more of that out. I think as we've been off for a while, one thing that I'd like to close out this initial episode of season two is, what are we thinking about moving forward? I mean, we talked about a lot of problems. There's a clear, first of all, I'm going to summarize, because there's a clear tie between credentialism, meritocratic and technocratic society developments, government structure, et cetera. It becomes very focused and narrow, and it doesn't put the best people in the best places from a leadership perspective. There's a difference between leadership and the ability to execute a government and run an operation, a business or a government structure, whatever it is, and the ability to create a new solution, a new invention, a new engineered, whatever it may be, right? So these are different skill sets. We can't treat them as the same. And I think that's what's happened time over time. And the second point is, we need to get the focus back on the community. We need to pull some of the focus away from like, you look at people because they have money, they have success. Like, what is success? To me, success is just as well the guy who is here fixing my plumbing that has two kids, that they go to school every day, that he's trying to do the best for him, for his family that he can. You know what I mean? That they have a house that they're working on. It's anybody that I associate with in this community that wants the kids in this community to be better, right?
Right.
That holds them to standards and everything else in between. I mean, it's what we can control first, right? That's where it has to be.
100%. I think equating success with financial gain is a fool's errand. You know, the success measure always should be, can I peacefully live my life the way that I want to live? And do I positively impact anybody around me? If the answer to that is yes, you've won the game of life, my friend. And anything else is just noise.
I think that's fantastic advice. Now, trust me, it's difficult to eat if you don't have any money. So I'm not saying.
Yeah, well.
It's this throughout the course of human history. Recorded human history. This is the line that we've tried to walk, right? How much do you need? What's wealth, capital? How do I raise my kids? What's the value in society? What happens if we do this or don't do this? You know, there's so much subjectivity in conversation.
Again, I think a lot of people have been led astray by the nonsense they see in social media, right? So if you look at a lot of, you know, different podcasts or YouTube shows or what have you, what's it about? It's about people on the grind, right? It's about having the side hustle. It's about trying to get, you know, the clout to have the followers, to have the, you know, flash toys and the flash trips and all that stuff.
Right.
None of it freaking matters, man. None of it.
We've run away from, we've run astray from reality.
Yeah. Yeah. The reality is, it's one thing to think that that's what you want when you're in your 20s, you know, and okay, we all do at some point, but pretty quick, you got to realize what you really want is to have good health and to have people around you that matter, that care about you, and that you care about in turn.
Absolutely. You have to have the foundation and the structure.
Yeah.
Not all of us are fortunate or blessed to have that. And those of us who are should reflect, you know?
You know, I've known many a person that died broke, but when they had the funeral, hundreds and hundreds of people would show up because they were beloved due to whatever their character was and how they treated other people. I think that's something to ponder as we go through life. And, you know, how do you want to be remembered when you're gone? You know, what was the impact that you made when you were gone?
Certainly.
I guarantee you, you know, nobody's going to say, hey, I wish I started another company. I wish I had, you know, more money in the bank. No, your regrets are going to be, I wish I spent more time with, you know, anybody that cared about me and that I cared about.
There are very few doubts to that, especially if you've been near that at any point in your life, even yourself or witnessed it from someone else. I know both of us have in some capacity. I would say as we move forward for the rest of this season, I think our goal here is to highlight again, what differences can we make? Right. I mean, I know we're going to talk about financial literacy as being very important. We're going to talk about training ourselves as individuals, young adults, to be future oriented, have goals, have plans, have structure. You need structure to work within, right?
Yep.
And I actually would like to talk more about community organization and government structure as I've a topic that I've thought and written about extensively. I do have some ideas I'd like to discuss. One of the other things that's important is
absolutely
behavioral changes. For us to recognize any change that's required to pull ourselves out of this situation, we first have to accept responsibility at the individual level. That's me, that's you, that's anybody listening and everybody else in between, right? So how do we point ourselves and how do we orient ourselves, and then how do we move in a manner that would make a difference or make a change, right? And I think those are all things that I really want to discuss in far more depth as we continue recording over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I agree, because I think as we encounter what we're probably going to go through in the next 6 to 12 months at least, if not beyond, these are going to be far, far more pressing and poignant topics than they might have been in the past. It's definitely leaving the world of metaphysics and entering the world of, you know, social interactions and the fabric of our, you know, respective societies globally. Because as we've said so many times, everybody's going through shades of this. It's not just the U.S.
Yeah. I've met a few people in my travels over the past few months. And I mean, the story has been quite similar coming out of Western Europe and Southeast Asia. So, well, I would like to end on that note. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us for the start of this season. And I know we kept this episode shorter than normal, and that is intended. Peter, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Daniel. And everybody, thanks again for joining us.
Talk to you all soon.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode. Subscribe now to be notified of future episodes and check out our website at theallunknowing.com.